Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Navigate the Path to Enlightenment. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the line this evening. In a short moment from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, JC Mack. But before I do that, I just wanted to take a couple of moments up front to share with you how this call will run this evening, particularly if you haven't actually been on a peopleyoushouldmeet.com call before. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking JC a whole series of questions on our topic. Some of them are my own, but like a vast majority of them will actually have come from people through the website when everyone was signing up. Now, I've known JC probably for around about six or eight months, and certainly him entering my life has had a very profound impact on the way that I see the world, and yes, it's been quite amazing just to be in his presence and to hear some of the distinctions he's made through his own life journey and also through an awakening experience went through around 3 years ago. He's a shining light in the world and really is inspired to actually bring awareness and consciousness to the planet through his own experiences and also through sharing the experiences of other people who have gone through similar openings. And yeah, it's a real great pleasure to have JC on the call this evening. Hey there, JC.
How you doing?
Welcome.
Yes, thank you. It's great to be here and thanks for letting me do this.
It's my pleasure, JC. Now, I thought we'd actually kick the teleseminar off, and normally I ask a question linked into the headline of the call. And I realise in asking this question that it may actually throw it out to being a very long call indeed. But I just wanted to kick you off by asking what exactly is enlightenment?
Oh, one of the easy questions. People have been asking that for 5,000 years. Just before we kind of get stuck into that, Damien, let me, you know, I always find that, and particularly with everybody that's listening, that if we can align our intention around something, it makes it much more powerful in terms of the outcome of the call. And I've been sitting here thinking about the purpose, really, alongside of what we're advertised for the call. And let me just tell you what I think would really add some power to this conversation for all of us if we aligned around it. I mean, for me, it's really about the intention of the call is to produce an insight into the nature of reality. That's really what I'd like to do, which then leads to a deeper sense of peace and stillness for everybody. So that, you know, that kind of contextualizes what we're doing. And my request would be that we all kind of align around this as a way of going into the conversation, because it frames it up in a way that can deliver much more value for people. So that's the first thing in terms of the setup before we get to this question. And then the next thing I just wanted to say is that, you know, any value that anybody derives from listening to our conversation really gets created not by me and you, but by the people that are listening. So, you know, you create your own value in whatever happens in life. It's not me that creates that for you. It's you that creates that for you. So I'd like us all to be responsible for the value we create on the call, because that, again, kind of injects a power into it and an ownership for each individual on the call. And, you know, I've spent many, many years dealing with leadership in the corporate world and everywhere else. And one of the things I know about leadership is it has to do with responsibility and accountability. So when we're dealing with enlightenment, you know, there's really nobody that can do that for you, which I've discovered after many years of playing with this stuff. So, you know, when you reach the last door, so to speak, when the ego finally collapses and the world as you've known it disappears and you're in the presence of divinity, there is no one there but you and God. So being responsible and being a leader in your own enlightenment is one of the things I'm really interested in. Not like someone's going to do it for you, not like there's some guy or gal or guru or club or something you can join. It really is, the more you own this yourself, the more power you have in moving yourself forward to that state. Because it really is, the state of the absolute really is an ultimate accountability of who you are. And no one can do that for you. So I just wanted to kind of contextualize the call for us all so that there's, you know, kind of like the maximum value that you get out of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's a great place to start.
You know what I mean? So I just wanted to kind of set it up like that. Now, you know, you start off with a question like, what is enlightenment? Well, you know, the simple version from my experience is really when you leave the kind of linear world of perception and ego and form and what takes its place as a nonlinear state of divinity. Now, that's kind of easy to say and, you know, harder, maybe much more difficult for some than others to do. And I don't think I have a definitive answer on that, but I know for myself, what happened in 2005, after God knows how many lifetimes and how much work I have done in this lifetime to try and have some realization of the truth, and then to have my mind disappear and my identity disappear and the conversation in my head disappear, and everything that went with that was a shock. And it wasn't anything I thought it was going to be like, and it wasn't like, oh, I had been doing some meditation and it was nice and this and that. It was overwhelmingly stunning. So is that enlightenment? I don't know. But certainly for myself, it was like an integration and becoming part of everything outside of the conversation in your head, the identity that you think you are, the personal you, you know, that would like to claim that it's making everything happen. When all of that vanishes, there's this state that emerges, not caused by anything, but emerges as a result of the conditions that you've been working on, that allows you to then experience the state of unity. And then the other thing I would say to that, it's not like a person becomes enlightened. Like it's a quality of who you are as a person. It's not like that, because people don't become enlightened. Who you are is enlightened, and you happen to be living here in a body with an identity and an ego and everything else that would like to be enlightened. You see what I'm saying? So I hope it's not too confusing, but a huge question.
Yes.
Huge question. Do I have an answer to it? I don't know. Probably not. But I can surely share my experience about what it's like when you kind of dissolve into a state of unity and bliss and divinity with everything, and who you think you are is no longer there. It's an incredible experience. And I'm sure there's levels of that as well.
Wow.
Am I making any sense?
Yeah, no, that's great. It was certainly a big question
start. You know, it's very difficult. You know what it's like saying, Damien, you know, if it's like, look, you know, it's like having a pet, like a dog. And then I look up the definition of dog in the dictionary, and it's got an explanation about what a dog is, but is that what it is to be a dog? I don't think so. I think it's an explanation about what we think it might be like, but only a dog knows what it's like to be a dog. So part of the problem, you might say, in having to describe a state of a nonlinear state, if you've never had that, the best you can hope for is a description about it. Do you know what I mean? Until you are that, then all you've got is a description about what you think it is. That's what makes it so difficult.
Yeah,
I still have a difficulty explaining it.
Yeah.
Probably never will be able to.
Now, JC, you described the whole experience as a shock, and I know leading up to that event, you'd been certainly on a personal quest over many years pursuing your own personal development and your own personal awakening. And I was just wondering, did you actually think that there was, or feel that there was anything that could possibly just prepare you for that experience?
No. Nothing could prepare me for having children. It's kind of, you know what I mean? Until you've had them, you can read all the books, and then you have a few of them, and it's a completely different experience. I talk to people that don't have children, that can comment on what it's like to have children and what you should be doing with your children, but until you have them, you really don't know. So it's a bit like that. It's a bit like that. And, you know, I spent most of my life obsessed with the search for God and truth, trying to make something happen, like seeking for something to happen, to then finally have what happened on August 2005. And though I'd had small experiences throughout my practices, spiritual practices throughout my life, nothing as shocking and overwhelming as that, but it could be different for everybody. This is just what happened to me. And certainly when that took place, it's undescribable. And did I, you know, spend all that time trying to make something happen to then realize in the presence of reality that nothing's happening? You know what I mean? Anything you think's going on is just a conceptual thought you're having about things, you know? In reality, there isn't anything going on till you put your spin on it. And that's part of the problem with trying to think your way to heaven. It's a very difficult thing to do. And the catch-22 is, in the beginning, all you have is your mind as a tool to work your way to an enlightened state of having your mind disappear, but the thing you have to overcome is your mind. So you've kind of shot yourself in the foot to begin with. You're using your mind to become enlightened, and your mind is the biggest obstacle to enlightenment. That's why it's so tough.
That's a very powerful distinction.
Can't think your way to God, Damien.
Now, Jesse, you also mentioned one area of fascination for me, and that's the whole world of perception. And like you described, the process of actually moving from a linear world of perception into the non-linear form of divinity. And we actually had a really powerful call last week with Diane Hall, just exploring this whole notion of the fact that we're all divine beings. Now, I was just wondering, this state of divinity, had you had an awareness of this throughout your life, or was it something that really just dawned on you as a result of this experience?
No, I mean, I've stumbled through life. I'm 55 years old now. I stumbled through life making every mistake you can possibly make, ending up in more trouble than you could possibly imagine, not really knowing, not really having any teachers until I really got, you know, to a point where I was decided that I really needed to do something if I was going to have a life. And that was the beginning of the pursuit. I think I've always been in search of something and never knew where I belonged. And that has just been a lifelong pursuit for me of doing that. But I would certainly think that ask me again. My mind disappears. Ask me again.
We're talking about the state of divinity. Like the non-linear state of divinity. Had you had an experience?
Oh, I've had small ones along the way. Moments of those things happening. And yes, are we all divine and are we all enlightened? Yes. And is there things obscuring the view? Yes, and that's the work at hand, working through the perceptions and the false perceptions towards the truth. And at every level of development, the perception of God is different. You know, 500 years ago or something, they were sacrificing people to what they thought was God in order to stop the earthquakes. We don't have that view anymore. So as consciousness raises and your perceptions and your spiritual development, and you develop spiritually, your view of reality, you get closer and closer to a view of reality. And the closer you are to an absolute state of reality, the more peace stillness and silence you begin to experience. So what seems like a linear world of a lot of noise in your head and a lot of thinking and a lot of form and a lot of everything else, that begins to kind of quieten down and move into the background as you begin to shift levels of consciousness into a nonlinear state. So then what begins to, you know what it's kind of like? Most of the mind is silent, almost all of it. And there's this tiny little piece of it that has this conversation going on, you know? Do you know if you were in a big football, if you were at Wembley, and the whole stadium is empty, that's kind of like your mind. And then there's this little radio playing off in the very corner of it, and you're attracted to the radio. That's kind of like the noise in your mind. And we're obsessed with this and addicted to and hypnotized by this conversation we're having. But who you truly are is Wembley Stadium, so to speak. So once you have an experience of being that, it really doesn't matter what's going on the playing field. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
We are attracted to the conversation and everything that's going on in this kind of linear world because we really don't know who we are or are having an experience of who we really are. Because when we shift from when the linear kind of dissolves and then this state of bliss arises, everything goes quiet, and then you realize who you truly are. But until then, it's like you're just playing around with the toys in the box.
Mm.
I don't know if that answered the question or not.
No, that's some very good insights in there.
Tell you what, ask the question, and who knows where I'm going to go with it.
Now, this is a question that just popped into my head off the cuff, but something I'm very fascinated with, JC.
Let it rip.
You mentioned earlier on about the consciousness rising, and lots of spiritual teachers around the world describing what we're going through at the moment is a rising of consciousness of humanity across the planet.
Yeah.
And do you think that's in any way linked to the sort of financial turmoil that we're experiencing around the planet as well?
Certainly, and partly because, you know, what was acceptable at one level of consciousness is no longer acceptable at another. What you could get away with before humanity began reaching a level of integrity, which is kind of a level as you pass it up the food chain of consciousness, you begin to hit this place where integrity becomes an important part of who you are. Until then, it doesn't matter. You'll rob everybody blind. In fact, until you reach a certain level, you're not really concerned about anybody else but yourself. So as the consciousness of humanity rises, then we reach a level of integrity, then what was non-integrous is no longer acceptable, and that's when it hits the fan. Wasn't it Christ that said, I don't bring you the sword of peace, I bring you the sword of truth? Which means it's going to hit the fan for those that aren't interested in that. Look at the banking. Look at people held accountable. You know, I worked in leadership and safety on huge construction projects throughout the world, and it became unacceptable to hurt people. People went to jail if they didn't do what they were told to do in terms of keeping people safe. Bankers are going to court and being sent to jail. Companies are, you see, the whole thing starts to rise and it becomes politics, same thing. Nobody's going to put up with it anymore. And it's not like everybody got a fax saying, okay, now we're going to do this. You just begin to notice that that's the way it is now, which is an indication of a rise in consciousness for humanity.
Mm.
Certainly.
Excellent. Now, Jung, the psychologist, had a concept of the collective unconscious, and I guess with the world as it is at the moment, there looks like there's like a collective ego as well. Now, I was just wondering, when anything moves along that path to enlightenment, I guess there is a tendency for the ego to kick in its heels and sort of try and hold its ground. I was just wondering, is it actually possible for the ego to actually step into this place of enlightenment? Both at a personal level and also in this sort of collective ego world as
well? Well, a state of enlightenment is actually transcending the ego. But en route to that place, and again, let's take my life, for example. As a, you know, full-fledged operating ego for most of my life, it was very interested in spiritual development. In fact, it was really interested in being an enlightened ego. The only problem is, what it doesn't realize in the beginning is that in order for that really to take place, a state of enlightenment, it has to dissolve. You have to transcend it. Because the ego is based in a false identity that you are this and you can cause that and you can make that and it's this. And it plays a very important function. We wouldn't be here without it. So you don't want to demonize something like this. You want to, you know, because we do operate in both worlds at all times, you might say. So has the ego, does it serve a function? It certainly does. But it makes a very poor master. And at some point in your development, it becomes the stumbling block to the next, to a nonlinear state. So it would love to be enlightened, but it shoots itself in the foot. Because what begins to happen from my experience, Damien, is as more and more you develop yourself and you're reading books and you're doing this and you're listening to teachers and you're praying and you do whatever your spiritual practices are, even if your ego is driving you to do that, at some point, you begin to get the essence out of the teachings. It begins to sink in like a sponge. And then it becomes a problem for the ego because it realizes it's just shot itself in the foot. You with me?
Yeah, totally.
And that process there, from my experience, is the process of, yes, you can use your ego to develop and teach yourself a lot of things, but at the end, when you reach that last door, it has to go along with everything else. It's like pulling bricks out of a dam, you know?
You pull
enough bricks, they fall down. Each brick is a level of spiritual development. When you've got enough bricks pulled out, the dam falls. And then what emerges, but not caused by, but what emerges is a nonlinear state of perfection.
Now, JC, in conversations that we've had in the past, like you described your experience like a series of dominoes actually falling one by one.
And yes.
Is the ego the actual last domino to fall?
Well, it's all along the way. In 2005, when I was laying on the floor with this rushing of energy going through my body, through the top of my head, up through my feet, through my arms, I thought I was having a heart attack. But as it began to progress, I realized what it was. And then from that point, I thought, what am I going to do? I just kept going and going. I thought, I'm going to surrender. I'm going to let whatever happens happen. First, you go through the terror of life, of being non-existent, of leaving the planet, of things. You go through a series of fears, which is the ego letting go. And as I surrendered each one, I surrendered my family, I surrendered my body, I surrendered my business. Each one of these, like a domino, letting go, letting go, letting go into the unknown. And, you know, what you don't understand, you fear. So I just thought, well, whatever it is, I'm going to let go. And I reached the point like a set of dominoes falling. And when the last one fell, everything, the conversation in my head vanished. The identity, this J.C. Mack identity that had done all of this stuff, that had all vanished. This perception of there was a me and a you vanished, that there was a here and a now, that there was some kind of sequential set of events going on. Nothing had any more importance than anything else. Whether it was a hunk of dirt or a diamond wouldn't have made any difference because there's no longer any sequence to things. So, yes, the dominoes are each time there's nothing more powerful than being able to surrender because it takes a lot of humility to do that and a lot of courage to do that. So the more you surrender everything to God or to the God of your understanding, the more it begins to pull those bricks out of the ego. So it's a series of letting go and surrenders.
Great.
In the end, you got to realize you have to surrender your life. That's a tough one.
Remember seeing, that's a tough one
when you've had a career. You think you've made that happen. You've done that. You've climbed a corporate food chain. You've produced this. You've had that. You've got invested. On and on. It's you talk about things being illusory or an illusion of the ego seeing things perceptually. Until you see an absolute view of reality, everything is perceptual. Each perception really is a level of illusion.
Great. Okay, JC, I'm going to dip into some of the questions that actually came in through the site. And this one actually moves on very nicely and goes a little bit deeper into exploring the notion of fear on the spiritual path. And this question actually comes from Anne in the United Kingdom. And Anne asks, how can you stay connected to your spiritual center and remain calm and positive when you are surrounded by fear?
Isn't there a Zen saying? I remembered this when I was on the floor, and it was like a set of fear and terror that I was going through, because at first, like I said, I thought, that's it. I'm having a stroke. I'm having a heart attack. I'm on the way out. After everything I've done, I'm on the way out here on the floor. And then I thought of this, I think it's a Zen quote, and it goes, all fear is an illusion. Walk straight ahead. But until you begin to see that fear is only a projection of the ego that's trying to protect its own existence, then it is very real. It is very, I mean, I call them real illusions. Fear is a very real illusion. And it's connected to the emotional part of your body, and the past and the future and your all of these things. So, yeah, I can understand why fear plays such a big part in keeping people from moving ahead in whatever it is they're trying to do. So is there, you know, in the midst of the chaos, can you be calm? Yes, you can, and no, you can't. For me, it's being able to accept whatever it is for whatever it is. Until you put your spin on it, something happens, and then I say, oh, that means I can't pay the rent, and it means I'm going to be out on the street, it means I'm going to be this, and do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. First you see a dog, and it's just a dog, and then it's a dog that might have rabies, and then it's a dog that might bite my children. And then you've got this big story about the whole thing. When you can really just see things for what they are without the concept, without the story, it really doesn't have the power that it usually has. It's the story about whatever it is that is the problem, not what it is. You understand?
Totally.
You see what I'm saying? It's the interpretation of whatever it is. Not what it is. So as long as I think it's in the Buddhist, I think in one of the Buddhist, who was it? Wang Po used to talk an awful lot about the conceptual mind, which is a huge stumbling block towards enlightenment, because we have a concept about everything. It's like my kid, you know, he watches TV when he's five, he sees a show about Batman, and then he puts a cape on, he goes up on the Chester and jumps off on his head. And I think, what, are you crazy? He says, no, Dad, I'm Batman. So he thinks he's Batman. That's like not a concept. He really thinks he is. But to us, Batman is a concept. But we do that about everything. We conceptualize everything. So when you can begin to distinguish things are just what they are, they really don't have a meaning until you give them one. You begin to loosen the bolts up on that. Does that make sense?
Totally, yeah. And I can certainly relate to the story of the dog. Actually, it was bitten by a dog in Vietnam when I was traveling there a number of years ago. I actually went through that exact same process from being bitten by a random dog to actually thinking that I possibly had rabies. And
you're going to be dead by the end of the week.
The whole spectrum of emotion around that event. Yeah, it was...
Sell the house, sell your shares, hurry up, you're dead by the end of the week.
Totally.
But that's what the mind does, you see. Again, you're working with a conceptual mind, which is the biggest stumbling block to enlightenment. That's why it's so damn difficult. But when you start to see things more and more the way they are, you begin to let go of all of that. It begins to loosen the bolts. And that really is just the stage of development. You know, cutting yourself a bit of slack and lightening up on yourself with these things is, you've got to have a sense of humor for serious spiritual development. I'm telling you right now. I think laughter is a quality of spirituality.
This next question I've got from Stuart is all about the practicalities of like a spiritual awakening. And I know that you personally went through challenges around navigating both the physical world and the spiritual world. And Stuart in the UK asks, how can I focus on my spiritual awakening when my practical life around me is in turmoil and seems to be falling apart?
Yeah, well, why would you separate the two is my first question. Isn't it all the same thing? If you want to learn patience, God will put you in the biggest queue in town. Yes?
Mm.
You don't get a little package and open it up and all of a sudden you have patience. Whatever it is you're working on is part of what you need to be overcoming so that you can move to the next level of your development anyways. Everything is an opportunity to progress spiritually. But there's also, we live in a world, do we not live in a world where victimization is an industry? You go to a lawyer, someone has to be victimized. Someone has to be a perpetrator and someone has to be a victim. So a huge amount of humanity lives within a paradigm of victimization, like somebody's doing something to you, like something's being done to you. And really, that's just a particular level of your development. You know what I say to my children? I've been saying this for years. If I get frustrated or upset, I got three babies. I mean, to me, that can be overwhelming. I can't think fast enough. If they're all having a conversation with me, I don't know what to do at times. You see what I mean? And I get frustrated at times, and then I can see that they're watching me getting frustrated. So I say to them, and I've taught them to do this, I first started by saying to them, look, you guys don't make me frustrated. I make myself frustrated. And now that they've kind of got that point, if I'm frustrated or I'm in the car or something like that, or I got angry about something or something happened like that, I went, who makes Dad frustrated? And they all yell out, Dad does. Because I don't want them wearing my frustration. So I want to be able to own that. That is me doing that. I'm not a victim of anything. I'm not being victimized by society, by my thoughts, by my, my situations in life. When you really start taking, we started out the call talking about leadership and spirituality, leading your own enlightenment. That's the willingness to really own everything that's going on and then use it to your advantage. I worked with some U.S. Rangers when I was doing some leadership stuff. And one of the things the Special Forces guys in America, one of the things that made the training so tough for them was beginning to get their head around the fact that no matter what happens, it's to our advantage. That's a huge bit of work to get your head in that place. Because it's so easy to think that it isn't. So my answer to that is, why separate both of those? Why not use whatever it is as an opportunity to develop? Will you get that perfect all the time? No. Is it a great insight to begin to work with? Yes.
Great. I mean, that's
all the same thing. There's no this world and that world. The linear world is part of the non-linear world of enlightenment anyways, yes, but it just doesn't look that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the playground.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's that concept alone, that no matter what happens, it is always to our advantage. I think that concept alone is worth its weight in gold. And
yeah. Well, I'll tell you, when you volunteered for that group of soldiers, and a very, very small percentage, 10% or something, ever got through the training. Couldn't do it. And if you can't get your head to that place, you don't make the team. But what a way to live.
It's powerful.
Even if you could do it half of the time. Yeah, I'm a victim from Monday to Wednesday, and then I am accountable for my whole life from Thursday to Sunday. You could schedule it. I used to say to people, you know, I used to get upset and something would happen. And I'd want to get upset about something, and I'd say to the person I was working with, I think I'll schedule an upset for Thursday at 4 o'clock. I'll get upset about this next week. Not right now. I'm too busy. I'm too busy to get upset.
Sounds like a plan. Now, this question is all about the whole world of rules and structures. And it's a question from Alexia in the UK. And Alexia asks, I'm in the process of a transition whereby the old game rules I played by have lost their power, e.g. guilt of not working every minute of the day. However, whilst I perceive that as good, I've lost my sense of structure. How does one navigate those times when the mind is rebelling against any rules?
I don't know if I got exactly what she's trying to get across there.
So I guess like when...
Tell me what you think she's saying.
Yeah, like when existing rules and structures are sort of tumbling down in your life, how do you, I guess, navigate that terrain?
I don't know. I know. Here's what I've known. When after 2005, I had an unbelievably difficult time, and still do, working with any detail in life. You know, my diaries, my structures, all. And structures are really important because they help support you in what it is you're out to accomplish. I've never been good at structures. I've been kind of winging it my whole life, so I'm probably not the best person to comment on structures, but I know for myself, I've had to find structures that work for me, regardless of whatever else is going on. For example, I have a difficult time reading anything in a sequential, linear fashion, particularly if my mind vanishes. So I've had to use colors in my diary, because colors are kind of a nonlinear thing. I can see a red. And that might mean, oh, you have to invoice somebody. So I've had a huge amount of difficulty with this. I relate completely to her. I have a real difficult time with structures, and I've had to find, people have had to call me to say, you know, you need to be there on Tuesday. You're in the city talking to an executive. You're here, you're doing that. Because it all just vanishes. And this state of still silence comes over me, and it's no sense of time, don't know what day it is. And meanwhile, I'm supposed to be at an appointment. So I've struggled with that. I still struggle with that. And I've had to kind of get people around me or systems around me or little structures around me to keep me and to have me be where I need to be. And I'm still working a lot on that one. I need a lot of work on that myself. Don't know if I can be much help to her.
Okay. This question is from Helen in the UK. And Helen asks, I have found that in intense emotional times, my creativity increases, i.e. through bereavement or loss, etc. But somehow I would prefer to be awakened without preceding chaos. And, yeah, is that actually possible, JC, do you think?
Well, I think everybody's awakening is different. You know, karmically, this has been how it's gone for me. You know, the karmic propensities that I have of this life or the karmic choices. I'm not playing football for Arsenal. I'm not going to play center forward for Arsenal next year at 55 with a bad back, am I? I really don't have that choice in life. I do have a set of choices that are available to me based on the karmic choices I have in this particular lifetime. So that for me has kind of determined how my pathway to enlightenment has gone. I know people, I get emails from people that have had no problems integrating it. been a smooth ride. It was kind of, you know, drip-fed to them, you know, where I got wiped out on the floor and couldn't work. I ended up on welfare, lost my business, you know, place to live, all of that took place because of the disruption of my kind of linear, normal, structured life when that happened to me. But it doesn't mean it's true for everybody. I think there's a saying, you know, the Zen saying that the truth about the path is that there is no single path, which is an indication that there is a path, which is the path of no path. So there is no single, from my experience, way up that mountain. There's a lot of ways up that mountain. It may be disruptive to some, not so much to others. That's an individual call based on every decision you've ever made. Every hair on your head is counted, huh?
Cool. Okay, JC, this question comes from Diane, and Diane's in the UK as well. Diane asks, JC, how do you reintegrate yourself into the world after experiencing a shift in your consciousness? When, for example, this shift has made you feel a lot less sociable than you were before, because you are now so sensitive to energies, noise, and being overstimulated.
Yeah.
How do you resist the temptation to just become a semi-recluse?
Well, you know what? There's nothing more that I would love, nothing more than to walk out into the woods and never come back. Yeah, I go running in the woods. I feel like a deer, you know? I get out there in the woods and I just, everything, the world vanishes. I don't want to come back. That was a choice I actually had to make at one point, because when what was left of my mind returned, the terror and fear and isolation of what was left of my ego, because it had then realized that its job was almost over. And it pulled every trick in the book, fear, terror, isolate, everything it possibly could to regain its dominion over my identity again, to recreate that, to get back to the way it was before the experience. And there was no going back. So it was a darkness and a hell that I could, and I've been in some dodgy situations in my life, but nothing as terrifying as that. So, you know, it's, 3 years later? I'm still working on integrating that. There's times when I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to speak. I'd like to be isolated. Well, I don't really think look at it as isolation anymore, as a sense of just being drawn to being in the presence of God in a more powerful way. But I have if I'm at a Canary Wharf at Citigroup, it's noisy and it's rackety, and I'm in the midst of all that energy and those people. It's harder to be in touch with that. But certainly as a natural state, when I'm sitting here and the stillness and silence is there, I don't need anybody, anything. Wouldn't do anything. Really didn't matter. But I know the difficulty in doing that because, you know, I have responsibilities. I have kids. I got to pay a mortgage. I'm a white boy in the West. I'm not some, you know, Indian that had some experience where he's got a couple of minders washing him and feeding him, you know, sitting on a sofa while everybody's throwing $20 bills at you. No, that's not what's happening with me. I'm a white boy in the UK, and I've got responsibilities, and I often just don't know how I'm going to manage that. I really don't. I don't know. Here's the key for me, Damien: surrender all things to God. Whatever it is, I'm sorry to make it so simple, whatever it is, surrender it to God and then let God roll out the options. My job is to do, I get up in the morning, turn my will and my life over to the care of God, ask Him that, you know, ask that I might be of some use, that I may serve humanity or the world in the name of the highest good in some manner, and then I get up and start my day, and I have no idea where it's going, how it's going to turn out. I rarely ever think of the future anymore because my mind doesn't work like that anymore. I don't even know if I had a past. It's very much in the moment, and I don't know how it's going to turn out. So I just, you know what, there better be a God, because I don't have a clue. I can't manage my own life. You know, I've relinquished that to God. So whatever it is, whatever the problem, the solution is spiritual.
Mm.
That's my thinking.
That's powerful. I just wanted to ask one of my own questions, JC, to sort of bring us up to the hour. And I was just wondering, is enlightenment different to self-actualization?
I don't know. Don't know what people mean by self-actualization. There's so many terms for this. You know, realization, enlightenment, I don't know. Don't know, you know, whatever we call it, whatever the names are we have for this, it doesn't even come close to the experience of it anyway. So I'll tell you what, buddy, if it happens, you won't be worried about those two things. You know what I mean? It's like words and conversation are an attempt to point to it. But in the final analysis, there's nothing you can say about this. There's nothing that can be said. We ramble around with it. We talk about it. We try and analyze it. We, from a linear point of view, try and get our head around what it must be like. We conceptualize what is enlightenment, what is this. It's the experience of that is nothing like you could ever conceptualize.
Yeah, JC shared some incredible insights over the course of the last 50 minutes. People on the call that I have no doubt would love to stay in touch with you and to connect with you on an ongoing basis. And I know that like you're planning many ways for people to stay in touch, and you've got lots of resources for people to access already. And I was just wondering if you could actually share some of those resources for people or how to stay in touch.
Yeah, the whole thing has started out of some people that organized an event for me in London to speak at. And it has been developing from there, Damien, in the integration of higher states of consciousness into everyday living is something I'm really interested in, given that that's what I'm doing. So I've involved myself in my own life and looking for ways to have my linear world work and how I can be of service to others that may be having these shifts in consciousness. So it's kind of started there. So we've put a website up, which is jcmac.net. That's jcmac.net. There's information there. There's you can see the video from the London event. There's the download, the audio download that's there. This will be made available. Also, I haven't done anything with this yet, but last week I did an interview with a U.S. radio station that had a listening audience of 3.3 million people, and that's available if people want to go to that. I have that link, so you can contact me through the website. We plan on there's a blog there. If people have comments, I'd love to hear about that, what's working, what's not working. You know, I've been working on those things myself, you know, taking care of my body, getting back to the gym, doing these things to have me functioning in the world. So I know there's a lot of other people that have ways and have gone through these things that have found things that have worked, and I'd like to make that available to people. So the site's a good spot to start that. It's a good place to communicate with me, and there's a small team of people around me that are helping me with this stuff because I don't know how to do that with those things. The other thing is the email, which is jc@jcmac.net. You can contact me through there. And we need all the support we can get so that we can make that available to others. So if you've got a great idea, something you can contribute, we'd love to hear from you.
Great.
And thank you, everybody, for taking the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, taking the time to, you know, if it's a very small sliver of humanity that's interested in a conversation about enlightenment. Getting a new house, maybe. There's nothing wrong with that. But mostly everybody is in a different kind of a conversation. So what everybody is doing that is even being interested in a conversation about enlightenment is really propping up the whole conversation and making available for others this. So just thank you very much for letting me do this. If there's anything we can do, we'll do it. And thank you, Damien.
Yeah, my pleasure, JC.
Yeah.
Like each week to week, it's just it is so inspiring to receive people's questions, to really create conversation. And I suppose we're just blessed in the world today with the technology that we have available where we can actually bring people together, like regardless of geography, culture, creed,
yes,
anything. Like it's just literally to come together and share a special space where we're encouraging everyone to become the best that they can be in this world.
What an opportunity to be alive. Isn't it Buddha that said, you know, to have heard of enlightenment is one thing, to follow it is another. To even be born a human is the biggest blessing of all. So, and you know, Damien, the work you're doing, thank you for what you've been doing, putting this out there too, because that's just such a fantastic contribution to these conversations that you're having. So thank you very much too.
It's my pleasure, JC.
Yeah, pleasure.
Now, I had a final question, JC, just for people on the call who are immersing themselves into their own spiritual path. Did you have any closing words or any insights that you would like to leave people with?
Be kind and loving to all things, including yourself. There's no rush. You know, stop seeking it. Yeah, how can you seek what you already are? You can't. Be kind and loving to all things. That will take you all the way. That'll take you all, including yourself. I can't think of anything else, Damien.
Fantastic, JC. Well, I just want to thank you and really send my appreciation to you. This is a conversation that literally come about because you've stepped forward and decided to make your life one of contribution, and I think you're making an incredible contribution to the world, sharing your experiences and also activating this dialogue between people as well.
Just get out on the firing line.
Yeah, just really acknowledge you and appreciate you for that.
Thank you, and God bless you all.
Cool. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we look forward to having you on a call very soon. Take care.
Okay.